Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to another April edition of the podcast. I know since the last time we talked, it's been a few weeks. I know I've gotten plenty of tweets, plenty of Gopher Illustrated members wondering when the next podcast is. So found some time here on a Saturday afternoon to record here as Luke just returned home from another Gopher softball victory. Luke, you want to give a little bit of a shout out to the Lady Gophers?
Yeah, I mean, Purdue's bad. Minnesota's good. We 8-run ruled them. They're a phenomenal team. I think right now they're playing, they're wrapping up today the series with Purdue, but there's something like, I think they're 47-3. I mean, which in
that's
softball,
absurd.
Which in softball, like softball or baseball, everybody knows that fluke wins and losses can happen, right? Like you can just have a fluke game that, you know, somebody's pitcher just absolutely dominates or for some reason. So being 40, whatever, the three losses is the amazing part. That's the thing that's amazing.
I think the third baseman is the freshman who just set the all.
She's a catcher.
She's the catcher who's hit now 16 home runs, I believe it is.
16 home runs, and she tallied her 61st RBI in the second game today, which is absurd.
I think we absolutely owe it to these Lady Gophers that if you want to go watch a very, very good Gopher sports team, I think you should probably head on over to Dinkytown there and give these ladies a shout. I know that from seeing some pictures on social media, too, that the line was – out the door. I think they've sold out how many straight games now?
I don't. They've got to be coming close to like fire capacity because at some point it's literally like standing room. And I don't know, but they were letting anybody in. Not saying they're gonna make money on softball this year, but man, there were a lot of people there. It was something like 1,500 at the game, the first game today.
That's fantastic. So. Again, if you haven't, you know, start paying attention to those Lady Gophers. They're doing a fantastic job over there on the softball field. I know, Luke, I think you brought your niece over there today. So yep. Anything we can do to support them. But, Luke, you want to give the listeners here a little bit of a rundown of what we're thinking for today's show?
Yeah, I think today we'll talk a little bit of spring ball. As you sit at the softball stadium, you can see the new facilities coming up, and it's kind of hard to not recognize that, you know, spring practice is done, but new things are coming and it'll be fun, especially with PJ Fleck being here. It's going to be a fun ride going into fall camp. We'll probably talk a little bit of recruiting, but primarily we'll go spring and maybe just some changes, you know, from the Jerry Kill to the PJ Fleck era. Recruiting styles different, offensive approach and defensive approach are going to be slightly different, et cetera, there. So let's just talk spring ball. I mean, the spring practice was ho-hum, horrible spring game. It was horrible per usual, but what spring game isn't horrible?
I know that there's some people that probably just heard that and are probably looking at themselves like, why is this Luke guy so negative?
But it's so boring.
Yes, and that's what I'm trying to allude to, is that if you want to watch legitimate football, I don't know that you got to see – I mean, you got to see more than I did for 14 practices prior to that. You finally got to see hitting, which is the first time we see that in terms of the Gopher media, in terms of me, Joe Christensen, and Andy Greeter. Some of the things that, you know, I was impressed to see was, first and foremost, I want to give a shout out to those offensive linemen. I'm trying to remember the five off the top of my head. I think it was Connor Olson, Nick Conley, Quinn Osland, Donnell Green, and I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting one of them, but they played every single snap of the spring game, both sides of the ball. And what you saw in terms of the spring game was you saw a lot of the ones going against the twos and a lot of the twos going against the ones. So it wasn't always the ones on offense in terms of the skill position players, and that's obviously what I used to identify that, considering the offensive line would stay the same. In terms of the skill position players, I believe at least 80% of the time they were alternating in terms of whoever the quarterback was with the ones at the time, Demicroft or Connor Rota, would rotate going against the ones and the twos. And so I do think it is worth noting as well that I believe Demery got the start that day. And I know he certainly, in my opinion, performed better than what Connor Rota did. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he did start because the first play of the game was that deep ball to Rashad Still on the sidelines for 60 yards. And again, that's what you'd been seeing for the majority of the spring, was that natural arm talent in terms of Demery knowing how to, you know, he gets the ball, he's able to see it cleanly, you know, he doesn't feel pressure. He's able to deliver a strike 40 yards down the field to a receiver, and they actually catch the ball. So, shocker that Minnesota's got some resemblance of a passing offense now, but they're going to need some more help there. So, I do believe that Jonathan Femi Cole was this year's Cole Banham, a.k.a. last year's James Johannesson,
yes,
which is everybody's favorite game. I know Andy Greeter and I like to play this game, is what obscure running back is going to steal headlines in the spring game to get fans asking us, why isn't he getting reps? So I think Jonathan had two rushing touchdowns on the day. You saw the offensive line hold up for the most part, even though Carter Coughlin and Teyon Devers, I believe Carter had two sacks, Teyon had one. So you see that new edge position for Minnesota starting to pay some dividends. But, I mean, it was finally hitting. And, again, for someone who had to watch 10-plus practices of the offensive line not being able to do a whole lot because of injuries, it was a breath of fresh air to see the defense being able to run around a little bit too.
Yeah. I think, I guess my takeaway, having not been able to make it to any practices, but getting a chance to watch the spring game, I was impressed. I was impressed with Demicroft and, you know, I guess trying to use sound logic, it seems like it's his job to lose regardless. I mean, I don't think he was head and shoulders way better than Connor Rota, but, you know, where he is being a redshirt sophomore, it just kind of seems to make logical sense that it's basically his job to lose.
I agree with that. And for me, coming into spring ball, like if we were having this conversation 2 months ago, I would think that Connor Rota would have been the assumed starter going in, which he was for the majority of spring ball. But I think the body of work that Demery has put forward in terms of his development on the field is more impressive than what Connor Rota had. I think that, I mean, you have more long-term potential in terms of with Demery. He's got 3 years remaining instead of Connor, which is one. I think you saw the development in terms of Demery being able to go through his progressions a little bit more. And again, this is all – it isn't the greatest place to be able to evaluate quarterbacks in that kind of setting as well, because Minnesota didn't have enough offensive linemen. You didn't see the quarterbacks really have to go through and see what their decision-making ability was when they had pressure in their face. We know the former Gopher quarterback here, when he had pressure in his face, and even when he didn't sometimes, would make poor decisions and not take care of the ball. And the little of it we did see during spring practice, I think Connor – was falling into that. I think there, I'd be standing there with a couple of the members of the media there, and it got to the point where I'd be like, there are going to be one or two throws today where Connor's going to feel some resemblance of pressure when they did go 11 on 11, and he would just freak out a little bit, and he would throw an interception where you can't make that throw. If there's anything I have learned throughout spring practice, it's that PJ Fleck and Kirk Ciarrocca really value the ball. They really value not turning over the ball. They want to make sure they take care of it. I cannot tell you how many times I heard over the loudspeakers throughout spring practice that the ball is the program. So whether it's the running backs taking care of the ball and not fumbling it, or the quarterbacks not giving it away to the defense, for a fifth-year guy, in Conorota. In my opinion, I believe that he led Minnesota's quarterbacks in terms of interceptions during the spring. And again, it's not like Demery is the one just checking it down every time. I mean, he was fitting it in between defenders. He was the one leading the team down the field. And you saw that again at the spring games. I believe Minnesota's scoring possessions, I think Demery was on the field for most of them. So I just think that Demery, and I know there's also been a lot of talk that, you know, PJ wants his 2018 quarterback and Brendan Armstrong to be, you know, the face of the program, the one that takes Minnesota the next step. So people will ask, you know, well, does Demery hurt that with Brennan? Because Brennan will see, well, you have a sophomore starting. Does that mean I can't start? I don't think – does it matter? I mean, just because Demery is the starter this year doesn't mean he has to be the starter next year.
And that's just, and that's just recruiting. Like, they're always going to tell the next kid he's going to be the face of the program. I mean, that's it's silly not to tell him that. But in the same respect, like, the kid's also got to realize that doesn't mean that, you know, the job is mine. Like,
well, I think what people get wrapped into are, and Gopher fans specifically, you look at some of the most recent Gopher quarterbacks, Adam Weber, Marquise Gray, and Mitch Leidner. Multiple year starters for, I think Adam started all 4 years, Mitch started all 4 years, and I think Marquise started at least two or three. So again, just because you are the starter 1 year and you have eligibility remaining, mm-hmm. doesn't mean, I think, going forward with this PJ Fleck staff, that you're going to be anointed the starter going forward. Right. You're going to have to earn it each and every year.
Well, not to mention, like, just because you're anointed the starter, I think every year, with the exception of maybe Weber, that someone has started a game because of injury or something. It's you're never guaranteed to play all, 12 games?
No, and Minnesota needs to find some more quarterback talent. They need to get on this roster because, again, I mean, Conorota didn't beat out Mitch Leidner for a reason. Demery redshirted last year. So it's, in my estimation anyway, I would be more comfortable going forward with Demery Croft for 2017. I think he's shown more in terms of what Kirk Soraka wants in an offense or in terms of a quarterback anyway. And I think people also get in the misconception that Demery is more athletic than what Mitch was and he'll be better with his legs. And I think folks are very quick to forget that Mitch Leidner was one of the best red zone weapons that Minnesota has had in decades. I don't think it's, you know, a preposterous statement, you know, looking at K-Fan there, that, like, it's not preposterous to say that. People forget that Mitch Leidner had 32 or 33 rushing touchdowns in his four-year career. That's amazing efficiency. And again, if we were to even break it down even further, he was extremely, extremely effective in the red zone, running the read option or whatever Minnesota was trying to do there in terms of creating space with his legs and being able to push forward for extra yards and getting into the end zone. Demery would much, much rather stay in the pocket and deliver a throw than he would be, you know, getting out of the pocket and running. Can he do so? Is he athletic enough to do so? Absolutely. But his prerogative, first and foremost, is to stay in the pocket and try to find an open receiver down the field because he knows that he's the arm talent and he trusts what he sees with his eyes to be able to make that throw. Because the big sticking point with Demery was that he was inconsistent with his accuracy and was inconsistent with his decision-making. Now, are both fantastically improved? No. Have they taken steps in the right direction that make me feel a lot more confident than I was 2 months ago with Demery Croft? Absolutely, because it is a Connor and a Demery race right now. Seth Green is nowhere close to the picture in my estimation. Tanner Morgan is the true freshman, obviously, and you got to see a little bit of him in the spring game for those who attended that. And it is just a Demery and Connor race. And in my estimation, it is going to be one that I think Demery should be considered the starter right now going into fall camp.
All right. So this is my big question for the episode are the days of power after power after power done?
I think so. And I hope so. And again, this is another thing we should probably address obviously with the offensive line, only 5 guys throughout spring ball. I know we talked about it on Gopher Illustrated this week was the running game in terms of the offensive line has to get better. You know, I can point to different statistical measures, different analytics, different advanced stats that tell you Minnesota's offensive line didn't run block very well last year. Again, go back. And watch any of the games for the most part last year. Yes, I know Minnesota ran for over 200 yards, I believe, in 6 of their 13 games. I just don't think that's an accurate representation considering Minnesota, I believe in those 200-yard performances, ran the ball on average something like 45, 48 times, which only comes out to like 4.2 yards per carry. And mm-hmm. with how talented your running backs are, I think the constant theme remembering back to that last year's season was Rodney Smith needs some help, because he made so much out of nothing, over 1,000 yards and 15 rushing touchdowns. Can you imagine what he would do with an upgrade to the offensive line? And the discussion was, yes, Minnesota has, I think, four returning starters coming back from next year, but this is also a bottom 25 run-blocking offensive line unit. Now, with those four returning starters, and presumably right now Connor Olson, the redshirt freshman from Monticello, slotting in at the center position, you know, how much of that is going to improve? You know, how much of last year's poor run-blocking unit was because of injuries? Three out of the four, I believe, had off-season surgery to repair their injuries. You know, how much of it was the scheme? How much of it was going against, I believe, at least a handful of top 25, top 30 run-blocking units in terms of on the defensive side of the ball? And how much of it was just the players weren't very good at that, because they were pretty good at protecting the passer? I believe they were a top 25, top 30 pass blocking unit in the country, yet they were a top 20 or a bottom 25 run blocking unit. It's a little perplexing there. But again, if you can bring these guys back, how much of it is that these guys are just going to get better with Ed Warner compared to with Bart Miller? You know, they're another year older, another year stronger, supposedly. You know, how much of it is technique? And so that's one of the big questions I really wanted to have a look at this spring. And unfortunately, because of the injury situation, we didn't get to see a lot of that addressed. I mean, the only sample that we have is the spring game, and I thought that Minnesota's offensive line did a pretty good job. But again, that's only a one sample. And I mean, Luke, you being a very analytical guy on the basketball side of things, you know, I really don't want to draw too much into that. You know, yeah. I think that Connor Olson is going to be an upgrade from Connor Mays. I think he's much more physical. I think he's much, much more athletic. And I think Minnesota is going to be able to do some things there. But I mean, I'm hoping that Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks, and I cannot undersell Shannon Brooks enough, I think people know what I'm trying to say here, is that Shannon looks fantastic. Shannon only had two carries in the spring game because he was battling an injury. They know how valuable he is. And I think Shannon Brooks is poised to have a big, big year if Minnesota can really figure out, you know, their offensive line issues they've had in the past with run blocking. Because as we're recording this, I believe we're getting into the seventh round here of the NFL draft. And as of right now, Jonah Perzik has not been drafted. And if he is not drafted today, Minnesota has not had an offensive lineman drafted since 2006. And then, frankly, that's unacceptable. Because you look at Iowa, you look at Wisconsin, you look at where they're recruiting their offensive linemen from, and you look at where Minnesota is recruiting their offensive linemen from, there's no excuse. Minnesota has to be able to develop an offensive line, and they have to be able to put them into the NFL, because you see the success that Wisconsin and Iowa have. It should be no different here. So, I mean, here's to hoping that Jonah gets taken here, and we can talk about that a little bit. But Minnesota needs to get an offensive line upgrade, and they need to start doing it here in the near future.
Yeah. All right, let's just do some kind of quick hitter things to close out kind of some of the spring practice discussion. Which position group to you stood out as being kind of the scariest going into fall?
I'd say wide receiver and tight end. When I look at wide receiver, I know that there's going to be two guys Minnesota's going to be throwing the ball to a ton. And that's going to be sophomore Tyler Johnson from Minneapolis North, and that's going to be junior Rashad Still. I know those two stepped up most during spring practice. I know that Tyler Johnson, far and away, looks like one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver Minnesota has right now. His ability to create separation and again, what Matt Simon is trying to teach these guys, specifically Tyler Johnson, plays very much to his strengths. Tyler Johnson is extremely explosive. I'm sure folks remember watching him from Minneapolis North on the basketball court. I believe in the state championship game, he jumped over a guy to dunk an alley-oop. So just because he's explosive in short bursts there doesn't mean he's the fastest guy, because I believe he runs like a 4.6, 4.7. So when you look at straight speed, that's not his strength. What it is being explosive in short bursts. So being able to get off the line, getting away from press coverage, Tyler's good at that. Breaking out of his routes to create separation, Tyler's good at that. And I can't remember Tyler Johnson dropping too many passes, if more than a handful throughout the 10 plus spring practices I was at. I love what Tyler Johnson did this spring, and I really hope it continues over to the fall, because he is going to be an absolute weapon for whoever the quarterback is. And then with Rashad Still, I don't think there's a player, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, that PJ Fleck picked on more than Rashad Still, because they know Rashad Still has the athletic ability to be a special player. He's 6'6", 210 pounds. He's got an extremely wide catch radius. But he hasn't always been the greatest leader. He hasn't always been the greatest with his body language. And I can tell you, this staff, you know, specifically his position coach as well, and Matt Simon, they really went after him to become more mentally tough. You have to be a leader with this unit, Rashad. You know, you can't be slumping your shoulders when we're doing, you know, gashes. If you drop a pass, I don't want to hear "woe is me." I want to, you know, I'm going to do my best, you know, change my best. I mean, that's something that PJ has talked a lot about. So between Rashad and Tyler, I know who two of the three receivers are going to be in three wide receiver sets, but I couldn't tell you who that third wide receiver is going to be. You know, Eric Carter has shown glimpses this spring, but he had some issues, you know, really reeling in the balls. He had some drop issues. Melvin Holland started out strong, but then he kind of went back to the middle of the pack for whatever reason. I don't think Isaiah Gentry ever got that burst back that you saw. I believe it was in 2015 in that Kent State game that had Gopher fans excited. I don't think that burst is back throughout the various injuries he's had throughout his career. Hunter Register hasn't received a whole lot of reps during the spring with the ones. Phillip Howard was battling injuries, and then he came on late during the spring. Drew Himileski, you saw him have a fantastic spring game. You know, is that something that's going to come on over? Because I think PJ Fleck talked about it at the presser afterwards, was he looks, and again, he genuinely means this in the best way possible, that Drew throughout spring ball looks like a baseball player trying to play football. And what he means by that is Drew is extremely athletically talented. He works his tail off. I mean, he's a yes sir, no sir kind of a guy coming from Marshall, Minnesota. It just hasn't always looked the cleanest. I mean, I think on Gopher Illustrated, I compared him to like a wild horse that you find out in obviously somewhere out in Colorado, and you're trying to train him in because you know he is, you know, extremely athletic, but he doesn't always know what he's doing. And I think that spring game was a very positive step for Drew. So maybe he steps in there, a redshirt freshman from Minnesota. Maybe it's one of the walk-ons. I know Matt Morse was someone that received reps with the ones throughout the spring. Clay Gary, someone from Lakeville South, is another guy who stood out. But Minnesota needs to find a third wide receiver. They need to have somebody step up, because as of right now, Minnesota's got two receivers, and ideally they'd like five or six. So, again, maybe it's one of the freshmen coming in as well. And then with tight end, Minnesota only had two tight ends that were healthy in spring. That was Nate Wozniak and Coe Keefe. And I know what Nate Wozniak can provide. He can be a very good blocker in the run game, but I just don't ask him to do a whole lot in the passing. 6'10". I mean, you think, I think if there isn't a play this year that Minnesota gets into the red zone, say they're at the five and they don't throw a jump ball to Nate Wozniak, I think Gopher fans are going to lose their minds, considering they've been asking that for 3 years. But Nate's hands aren't always the greatest. Coe Keefe is someone that I'm high on. I think that he can absolutely be a role player for Minnesota this year on special teams and have a role in the offense. And that role can continue to expand as he gets bigger and stronger and more explosive. But I'm not convinced Brandon Lingan comes back to what he once was in 2015, where people in the NFL draft community were thinking he was going to be an NFL draft pick. And not only that, but someone I think was drawing, you know, potentially top 100 picks. He's battling another injury. I believe it was a collarbone injury last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Some guys for whatever reason are just injury prone. And I don't like to say that about most guys, but you've seen what Brandon's, even going back to his days at Wayzata, I believe he was battling injuries. And now you look at, he's coming in off another off-season surgery. I know he's still 3 months away from supposedly getting close to 100%, but I have my doubts. And again, I hope Brandon comes back 100% and puts those doubts, my doubts, to the wayside and becomes an electric playmaker at tight end. a position that Minnesota is going to need some help opening up things between the hashes, but I have my doubts. Minnesota needs to find a playmaker between the hashes, and I hope Colton Beebe becomes that when he comes back from his meniscus tear. And then Bryce Witham was out the entire spring, and I wasn't anticipating that, but he was out with a hip injury. Again, Bryce Witham's another guy, since he's become a Gopher, that he has been wearing orange a lot more times, in my estimation, than he has been fully practicing. So Minnesota's been pretty snake-bitten in that position with injuries. So now they signed three tight ends, and I think Jake Paulson, a kid from Louisville, is going to have to come in and play right away, and he's going to have to be able to be an asset in the passing game. But I still have a lot more questions than answers at wide receiver and tight end, Luke.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not really a surprise given, you know, the struggles in the passing game last year, and you know, we don't have an influx of freshman talent yet. Yeah, just not a huge surprise. So let's talk a little bit about, I don't know, maybe the changes that we're seeing stylistically. Obviously, when you get a new head coach, things are going to change, right? And they really do change with PJ Fleck, with his you know, his emphasis on culture, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and even in the recruiting game, right? In recruiting, right now you see they have 13 commits, I believe. And, you know, this time last year or previous years with Jerry Kill, they'd be lucky if they had one or two. You know, now that we've had Fleck and his crew around for a little while, what are some of the major changes that you're seeing?
Yeah. Before we get to that, I do want to touch a little bit on defense, just because I don't want to.
That's fair.
Let people, you know, what about the defensive side of the ball? I think defensive tackle, they're going to be set for 2017. I feel pretty confident about the four or five guys there. I'm still a little bit leery about their end spot, because they only have two defensive ends on the roster for spring ball, and that was Winston DeLaetti-Boudere and Jerry Gibson, in terms of scholarship players. And I know Winston is someone that's going to bust his tail each and every play. Again, he's a kid who's played with a chip on his shoulder his entire career. He's not the biggest guy, but I can guarantee you his motor is going as hard, if not the hardest, on defense. I had some doubts about that edge position in terms of with Carter Coughlin there and Teyon Devers, just because Carter is someone that I'm going to be interested to see how it plays out if Minnesota continues with this stylistic change on defense, where it's, you know, whatever you want to call it, a 4-3 or a 3-4, considering Carter is a stand-up Rudge Escher while the other three are in three-point stances. I have concerns about Carter being there against, you know, power teams like Iowa and Wisconsin that have big, gaudy offensive linemen and their tight ends, 270 pounds too, because Carter's giving up somewhere between 40 and 80 pounds, depending on who he's going against, and that's not an advantageous situation for him. Now, where you can see him being an asset, and you saw that in the spring game, was I believe he had two, if not more than that, sacks. Where Carter's extremely explosive in short bursts. He's got 6'4" with great length, very, you know, quick twitch kid. And the same thing with Teyon. That's where Minnesota's going to be able to use them. And again, you don't know what Minnesota's going to be doing. Bell's defense was so effective at rushing the passer was because of those different blitzes they did schematically. And again, you're not going to see that in the first spring ball. You're not going to see that basically any spring, considering they want to keep it as vanilla as possible because they know people can, you know, go back and rewatch the tape. Linebacker, you get Cody Polk back and Blake Cashman back and Julian Huff back. And Julian Huff was someone that was out for the majority of the spring in terms of with contact because he had offseason ankle surgery. Cody Polk was out for the entire spring because he had offseason surgery. And then obviously Blake Cashman as well with, I believe he had double labrum surgeries on both shoulders. So three more scholarship guys with Blake getting a scholarship that come back to an already loaded linebacker core. I'm not worried about that, but I still do have my doubts about the secondary. I know that Coach Fleck had been hyping up Jacob Huff all spring, and rightfully so. I don't think there's a defensive back who had more interceptions than Jacob Huff. I still have concerns about tackling with him. And again, I didn't get to see a whole lot of tackling because Minnesota didn't tackle outside of the spring game because of their injury situation. But you saw it a little bit in the spring game, again, with Jacob Huff. And I believe he played a little against Iowa, and that was the issue then. And you saw Jonathan Femi-Cole go through him during the spring game for a touchdown. If Jacob Huff can tackle, I'm going to feel a lot better because I know he's going to be a playmaker with Antoine Winfield and Duke McGee back there. And then in terms of the corner position, I am still a little bit leery about the depth they have there. I know Keandre Thomas and Antonio Chanel missed time during the spring, and Minnesota's got three corners there with those two and then Zoe Creighton and Kunle Ayinde. So I hope Coney Durr comes back ready to play this fall, because if he does, he's going to have to immediately play. And then Justice Harris and Adam Beck are going to be added in this summer as well. So that's your little scouting report there on the defensive side of the ball. But in terms of Coach Fleck and then the Jerry Kill and Tracy Clay's recruiting styles, you do see a gigantic difference. You see Coach Fleck immediately when he took the job at Minnesota in January. Those first 30 days, this is my sixth or seventh year covering Minnesota now. I have never seen so many offers go out in such a short amount of time. And the thing about it is, when you look at a Jerry Kill and Tracy Clay's recruiting style, that they were a staff that were very deliberate about their offers in terms of they wanted to wait and see what these kids look like during their spring evaluation for the most part. They wanted to go see them live. Then they wanted to come back and re-rank the board, go see them live again. And then at the end of the spring evaluation period, which is the end of May, they'd re-rank the board and extend offers from there. And with the PJ Fleck regime, what I'm seeing anyway is, you know, they're not afraid to put out an offer to try and get in the game for a kid who's already got a plethora of, whether it's Big Ten offers, SEC offers, ACC offers, Pac-12 offers, whatever it may be. You know, they want to get in the conversation because, and I'm finding this out more and more, is as long as the recruit can get in front of PJ Fleck, whether it's via FaceTime or on campus, Minnesota's got a shot. It's the Fleck effect. It's just his charismatic personality is one that is immediately going to turn on a recruit or turn off a recruit in terms of their interest in Minnesota. So what you're seeing here is, you know, Minnesota is not just solely basing their evaluations off the film with PJ Fleck. You know, from my talks with sources within Gibson-Nagurski complex there, I mean, these are kids that Minnesota went and saw in January that, you know, as they were trying to fill out a 2017 recruiting class, they also were going to see some of these 2018 kids that they have committed. Kids like Terrell Smith, the corner from Georgia, who's got SEC, Big Ten. He just picked up a Jay Savelle Wake Forest offer as well. So for those of you worried about defensive backs, if you see a Jay Savelle Wake Forest offer there come out, so I think that should rest assure your doubts there. So it's just different. I mean, and the other thing is, you look at their commits. I think you mentioned it. Minnesota didn't get their first commit in 2017 until the spring game last year. Heading into the spring game this year, they were over double digits. So
yeah, they're 13 right now.
Like, yeah, I mean, they just picked up one last night. So
are all those offers committable? I know, like in basketball, very often, you know, they'll hand out a plethora of offers, but you know, they might only have, you know, two that they can actually give, right? So, but a lot of them aren't really committable at the time, but they're like, hey, this is like not a reservation, but more so like, hey, we're interested. This is how interested we are.
Well, in terms of if they're committable or not, I mean, I get the point you're trying to allude to, but you know, say like Minnesota offered seven quarterbacks for the 2018 cycle.
Sure.
They got Brendan Armstrong. Well, I can tell you, they then called all the other quarterbacks and were like, hey, just want to let you know we got our quarterback. So your Minnesota offer isn't committable. Thanks for the, thanks for the interest. If something changes, we'll let you know. So, I mean, there are a few positions where Minnesota is full at.
Sure.
And there are a few like wide receiver where they already have two and, you know, in air quotes, they're looking to draft that third in terms of they want to figure out who they really want to go after here. And that's part of the spring evaluation period for Minnesota right now is these first 2 weeks of recruiting in terms of with all the position coaches on the road. Now they're going to be off the road for, you know, 4 or 5 days. And then what's going to happen now is all these coaches come off the road from seeing their recruiting areas. So, you know, for example, Minnesota's running back coach is Kenny Burns. Obviously, I have to bring up another Burns considering he has a fantastic last name. So Kenny Burns recruits areas such as Michigan and St. Louis. So for the first 2 weeks, he went to his recruiting areas and saw guys from running backs to defensive backs to linemen. So now he comes off the road here, and all the coaches get back. They, you know, share their notes, share their evaluations, and they re-rank the recruiting board in terms of what they thought, you know, in terms of what they thought about each kid. And so how this applies going forward is now what they're going to do for the final 2 or 3 weeks is position coaches will go see their position. So Kenny Burns goes from seeing St. Louis kids, Missouri kids, Michigan kids, to now he's only going to go see running backs. So he can get a feel of what guys does he want. You know, what are your top 2 or 3 guys, Kenny? Because after you get off the road in May, we're going to re-rank the board again. And with your input, the offensive coordinator's input, and Coach Fleck's input, whatever those 2 or 3 guys are, we're going to try like hell to get them on campus in June to try and get them committed by their senior year. So how does that differ from what Tracy Clays and Jerry Kill did? They relied a lot more on camp evaluations, and they didn't like to fill up early, which is something that is going to happen here because they thought they were going to find some late bloomers. And, you know, they certainly did from time to time, like a kid like Demaryius Travis. You know, I'm trying to think of some others off the top of my head. Rashad Still, Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks. I mean, Jonathan Celestine as well. I mean, so you do have some good players that they find there, but you also find yourself in some situations like what's going on with the defensive line right now, because they don't have a defensive tackle on the roster for the 2018 spring season as we sit here today. And that's because they swung and missed too many times in January. I mean, they would swing and miss on their top guy, and then Tracy wouldn't want to bring in, you know, just a body. Okay, well, you can do that, but now you're going to be in a situation like PJ is going to be in going forward, where they need to seriously retool on the defensive line. And that's the one area where PJ has the most attention throughout this 2018 recruiting class is on the defensive line. And if they, you know, they have a few guys that they're on the top of their list for, and if they're able to get some of these guys committed, they already have, I believe, 3 in the best defensive tackle in Illinois, in Elijah Teague, who I've seen twice this month. I think he's going to be a very good player. Logan Richter from Pearl, Minnesota, who's 6'4", 290 pounds, and he does not turn 17, I believe, until November. And then Abby Akonji, a defensive end of sorts from Georgia as well. I mean, they have a few other guys that they're really trying to get into the fold. And if they're able to sign the defensive line class that they is absolutely attainable for them, it's going to be the best defensive line class they've signed in quite some time. So it's just a lot of differing recruiting styles between PJ Fleck, where PJ is probably going to be 80-85% full in his recruiting class by the time Minnesota plays Buffalo, where Tracy Clays and Jerry Kill would maybe have 7-8 commits by the time the season rolled around. So not saying either is right or wrong. It's just, it's, as you point out, very different stylistically.
Yeah. I'd imagine that what will happen is when you have an approach like PJ Fleck, you're then trying to like keep them, right? That's the plan. Like when you're 85% full, it's retaining them and keeping them on board because, well, I guess they're going to get the early signing period now, whereas before they didn't, and you had to go all the way to February to keep a kid committed.
Yeah, and that's going to be the other interesting part is I believe kids are going to be able to sign in December this year. So you will truly find out who is committed and who is not because they'll have the option to sign in the early signing period, which I believe is the second week of December, instead of signing in February. And again, that's going to be beneficial for a school like Minnesota, in my opinion, because you'll find out who is committed first and foremost, and you won't let these blue blood schools, these helmet schools come in late December, January and pick up your commits. So, I mean, I think that's going to be beneficial. I mean, you look at like a Nate Andrews type of scenario.
Yeah.
For folks who aren't familiar with Nate Andrews, trying to remember what year it was now. I think it was 2013 that Minnesota had a defensive back from Alabama committed by the name of Nate Andrews. And he was committed all through December. And then he goes to an all-star game in the Georgia versus Alabama all-star game. And he absolutely blows up. He gets offers from Tennessee, Auburn, Florida State. He eventually flips to Florida State. And I believe before last year, he was leading in interceptions during his tenure there. So, again, can you imagine getting a Nate Andrews in here, get him signed so the other SEC schools don't poach them come January, because that's what every Power Five school is basically doing to the lessers, you know, air quote lessers of, you know, whatever the conference is. So, you know, Minnesota, as we sit here, I believe has a top 15 recruiting class right now. Now, do I expect it to remain there? I think it will for quite some time, but I still think they're probably going to be between that 25 and 30 range come signing day. Just because, you know, to stay in the top 25, you're going to have some four-star kids. And, you know, with the NFL draft coming and going here, you see all these things on social media, you know, stars don't matter because like a kid like Corey Davis goes, you know, Corey Davis, the Western Michigan wide receiver that Coach Fleck and Coach Simon groomed to now with the number 5 overall pick to the Tennessee Titans. You know, things like that do happen where Corey had some academic issues, which is why he signed late. I think he signed in like March or April. So, you know, schools like, you know, Notre Dame, Illinois, you know, Northwestern, they're not going to take a chance on a kid like that. But I mean, don't kid yourself, folks. Like, stars do matter. You look at the first round of the NFL draft, which happened on Thursday night. I believe that 20 of the 32, or it might have even been more than that, were 4 or 5-star kids on scout.com. So, and when you look at the ratio, I mean, obviously there were some 3-stars in there, but there are so many less 4-star kids than there are 3-star kids. Like, they're, for all the 4-star kids that were drafted, you know, say there's, you know, only 1 in 9 4-stars and 1 of 60 3-stars got drafted. Again, if you're a 4 or 5-star kid, I mean, you're a pretty talented player. Now, Minnesota has the opportunity to have a couple of their commits get bumps up to 4-stars, but for them to remain in the top 25, they're going to have sign probably 3 or 4 4-star kids to remain there. They have a lot of solid mid and high level 3-stars, which is probably going to put them down as one of the best recruiting classes that we've seen in quite some time. But for them to remain in the top 25, they're going to have to find some 4-stars.
Sure. Let's transition a tiny bit and just talk about, you know, the Gophers under Kill and Clays, they succeeded. They were able to get to bowl games. They got to 8 wins, 8 and 9 win seasons. I'm trying to think, do they have 5 Big Ten, or they had 4 and 4 Big Ten records? Did they get a five and three record once? I think so. I mean, and you know, they were able to win some, they were able to win some games and have some success, and some sustained success. With Clays, you saw a couple bowl victories. But I think it's pretty obvious where if they were going to take the next step, they relied heavily on defense, but they were going to be able to take the next step up, they were going to have to make an offensive adjustment, right? And they were going to basically have to make a huge jump there. And we just really never saw that happen over the tenure with Minnesota.
No, we haven't. And this is something I've talked about with a couple of my old sources who used to be in the staff here at Minnesota. I've talked a lot about it with them lately, and we've come to that conclusion that I think last year Minnesota's 9-4 record was going to be the ceiling until things on the offensive side of the ball changed, and I don't know that they would have changed. And what I mean by that is, look at the quarterback position, folks. I can't tell you how infuriating it was to watch quarterback recruiting under Jerry Kill and Tracy Clays. You look at some of the quarterbacks they signed that never panned out because most of them transferred. Demonic McKenzie, Chris Strevler. I'm sure there's more I'm forgetting, because I know that 4 out of the 7 quarterbacks that Minnesota signed under Jerry Kill either transferred or moved positions. So they just never could figure out what they wanted to do with the quarterback position. And then you look at the 2017 quarterback recruiting, it was just infuriating. I mean, you look at the one that Minnesota signed under Tracy Clays and Neil McLaurin. He already transferred out. He was fifth string, and he was rightfully fifth string.
Yeah.
There was, if Neil McLaurin was the starting quarterback for Minnesota next year, they're maybe winning four games. You know, and that's stretching it. Neil McLaurin is not a Big Ten quarterback.
Yeah.
And where things got into trouble was, specifically last year, Tracy Clays was looking for a one-in-the-million kid. They only offered two quarterbacks before something absurd like November. And you look at where some of the three quarterbacks they offered, one is now playing center field at the University of Texas. One is now at Penn, like Penn as in the Ivy League school. There's not, I mean, you want to go chase an Ivy League education, that's fine, but these aren't the kind of schools you should be competing with. Like, you should be competing with other Power Five schools. Like, they never could figure out quarterback.
Yeah.
Because what they wanted, or what Tracy wanted, was to go into next year with Seth Green as the starter. I do not at all feel comfortable with zero way with Seth Green as the starter at Minnesota next year. No way.
Yeah.
He has a long way to go in terms of his quarterback development. He is an absolute plus athlete, but that's great. And that's where things have been getting into trouble for Minnesota, is you can have a great athlete at quarterback, but if you can't throw the ball, you can't do a whole lot.
So one thing I've wondered about, like, it was very obvious that their approach at quarterback was, okay, we want to get a guy that either one has position flexibility, right?
Just to wrap up quarterback, like, I can tell you for certainty, Jay Johnson didn't have the authority to make an offer at quarterback. He didn't. How can you limit your offensive coordinator and quarterback coach to not offer a kid?
Well, see, that's what's...
I mean, truthfully, Jay Johnson didn't even know what Tracy Clays wanted in a quarterback. And that, how you can't have that kind of separation between your offensive coordinator and your head coach.
Well,
that's where you saw Minnesota get in trouble.
Well, you also can't have the situation where they had with Matt Limegrover calling like run plays and whatever dude man was that was the quarterback coach calling pass plays either, right? So here's the thing that kind of always blew my mind, and I always wondered how the Kill regime got into this. They seem fixated on needing to have a quarterback that had position flexibility, right? Because if it didn't work out, they can move him to whatever, you know, whether that be tight end, whether that be receiver. You know, they saw that with Marquise Gray. Did this go all the way back to the Chandler Harnish, Northern Illinois guy?
That's another conversation I've had.
Like, because he was an athlete, right? No question, he was an athlete that turned out to be an all right quarterback, got a sniff in the NFL, but like, is that like the only time that worked for them?
I think so. And again, like, that's where I think they got in trouble, was they kept trying to find their Chandler Harnish.
Right.
Plus, you see the lack of development at wide receiver, and especially at offensive line. Again, I don't have to harp on this any more than I have. Minnesota hasn't had an offensive line drafted in more than 10 years.
Well,
it's unacceptable. And you see the state of what Minnesota's offensive line is in right now. It needs to change.
Yeah. I give Clay's credit though for getting rid of Limegrover. Like, he needs credit there, because that was something that was obvious that needed to happen. And it was never going to happen under Jerry Kill. Right. Because to a point, Jerry was too loyal. Like, absolutely too loyal. Sometimes you got to be able to look in the mirror and see where your weaknesses are and try to find a way to fix them.
And he wouldn't have absolutely done that. He did that with letting go of Matt Limegrover. You know, Matt landed on his feet at Penn State. You know, I hope he finds success there, but he didn't give Minnesota success. And that's the thing. Tracy saw what he needed to do, so he lets Jim Zabrowski go. He lets Matt Limegrover go. But for Minnesota to have been able to take that next step, he would have had to look at himself and let his offensive coordinator recruit a quarterback that he wants to recruit. Let him have some decision-making, because Jay Johnson could call things on offense, even though you saw in the second half times he would really limit his playbook, considering his quarterback couldn't make a whole lot of throws. But for Minnesota to have been able to take that next step, they would have had to, because I think Bart Miller would have fixed things in the offensive line eventually. I'm a big Bart Miller guy. And obviously with Ed Warner now in here at Minnesota, his pedigree, I think, speaks for itself. But wide receiver and quarterback would have been the next two things Minnesota would have had to address. because I'm a firm believer that the defensive side of the ball would have remained a top 25 unit. But you saw how limiting it is where Minnesota won nine games last year. All out. They could have won 10, 11, 12 because in all four of their losses last year, they were winning in the second half and they were winning three out of the four games in the fourth quarter when before more times than not, the quarterback threw away the game. So quarterback would have needed to have been changed. And so would have wide receiver anyway, because again, you look at how many scholarship players Minnesota has at wide receiver right now, and the lack of actual wide receiver talent is glaring.
Yeah.
And so that's where you see PJ come in, with Kirk Sharaka, who I am a big fan of in terms of his quarterback evaluations. Obviously, Matt Simon and PJ Fleck, with now Corey Davis going number 5 overall. And they also had a wide receiver by the name of Daniel Braverman, who was taken, I believe, in the 6th or 7th round last year by the Chicago Bears. Again, two guys who know what they want at wide receiver, and they'll go recruit to that. And that's the thing with PJ here, and from what I know of the conversations throughout his building, is they know what they're looking for at every position. Mm-hmm. And the position coach and the coordinators have a lot of say, and they're not afraid to go out and fill early because they know what they want. If they see what they want, they'll go out and try to get it committed. And now, if that's going to pay off come after the season when they actually have to sign, it remains to, it's still a question mark, but at least they know what they want. They're not afraid to go out and get what they want. And if they, believe in something, whether it's a high-profile kid like a Tyreek Henderson or Elijah Teague, or if it's a low-profile kid where Minnesota's his only Power 5 offer right now in Purim's Logan Richter at defensive tackle, or the latest linebacker commitment in Mariano Sorry-Marin, Minnesota's his only Power 5 offer. So, you have a mix of kids where it's, a hashtag trust the coaches with those two kids. But then you look at some of the other offer lists, that all these kids have Power 5 offers. So, it's just a different blend of what I'm used to covering anyway.
Look, can we be completely honest about the wide receiver quarterback struggles? I think that was a systemic problem. I don't think that was ever going to get fixed. I think Tracy took the right steps, but until you got rid of the like, we are going to be a power running team, you're never going to fix quarterback, and you're never going to get wide receiver. Why does the Pac-12 succeed in getting guys getting receivers and let's throw in the Baylors and some of those Big 12 teams? It's because of the style that they play. You can recruit to a style, and they were never going to attract talent at the wide receiver position.
I don't think that's a fair thing to say. What I think is fair to say is Minnesota went through a few different stylistic changes on offense. So first they were going to be a spread team. Then they changed to power, and then they were changing things again.
Okay, that's fair.
Like, you can't keep changing offenses. I mean, you got to find something that works and stick to it. And that's the issue, is they weren't finding a lot of things that worked. Now, whether that was because of Jerry Kill's play calling and Jim Zabrowski and Matt Limegrover and so on to Jay Johnson, I think Minnesota did find success last year, obviously, on the offensive side of the ball. But until people throughout the entire building, in terms of the position coaches, the recruiting staff, to the head coach, knew what they wanted at a specific position, and that didn't change, I just don't see it in terms of things on the offensive side of the ball anyway. That was going to be Minnesota's ceiling last year, because you look at, say Jay Sovell, Mike Sherrills, they stuck around on the defensive side of the ball. Minnesota could have ran the 3-4, and they could have ran it pretty dang effectively. Mm-hmm. But they would have also gone into next year with Seth Green as the starting quarterback and Neil McLaurin as his backup, because Connor Rota wouldn't be here. Demery Croft probably would transfer out. And your quarterback would have severely limited you. And, it's just things that I don't think would have changed until Tracy would have, looked at himself in the mirror and said, I need to let my offensive coordinator be the offensive coordinator. He's also the quarterback coach. I got to let him, entrust his evaluation. That's why I'm paying him, or the university's paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars. let's trust his evaluation. You know, Tracy Clay's an elite defensive mind, one of the best that have come through here in a long time. But, you know, the thing is one of the cases where you're getting your hand caught in the cookie jar. Tracy, the offensive side of the ball, and specifically quarterback, is not something that you've ever recruited. You know, Jay Johnson is someone that's an offensive mind, someone that's had success at Louisiana Lafayette. Mm-hmm. You're hiring him for a reason. Now, trust him. Because, I can tell you, this was a conversation that was had that Jay Johnson didn't know what he was looking for in a quarterback. How can your offensive coordinator not know? It's because, the people above him who hold those decisions didn't give him a clear path to what this is what we're looking for. So it's just –
Yeah.
Okay. Now with PJ Fleck here, there is a set expectation. This is what we're looking for. If you see it, let's evaluate it. Let's see them live. And if we like them, let's offer them and try like hell to get them on campus to get them committed.
Okay. Let's close with looking at this from the from Mark Coyle's perspective. Okay. Did Mark Coyle make the right decision? Do you think this was the long-term decision? Then I'm going to give you my opinion on Mark Coyle and why he made the decision he made. Did he recognize that this was the ceiling, or what do you think the thought process is there in your opinion?
Mark Coyle?
Mark Coyle, athletic director Mark Coyle. Sorry. I maybe didn't enunciate particularly well. Sorry.
So does Mark Coyle think he made a great decision long-term? Is that what you think?
No, I'm saying like as he's going through the meat grinder of the whole, the whole sex scandal, for lack of a better term, and eventually gets rid of Tracy Clay's. It seemed convenient, right? A reason to cut bait there, even after a successful 9-4 season. Do you think that that's what he recognized, or what do you think his motivation was? I have my assessments. I'm going to give you first crack.
Well, that's a loaded question. I do think that he's happy with it. Again, the difference in terms of what a head coach is today in college football is so much different than it was 10, 15 years ago, where, more times than not in college football, your head coach is one of the best football minds. Whereas today, the head coach of the program is more just the CEO type and one that is the marketing face of a program. I mean, you look at Penn State with James Franklin, you look at Ohio State with Urban Meyer, yes, these guys are good coaches, but they're also very marketable. And so you look at PJ Fleck, his row the boat. I mean, this is one of the most marketable guys Minnesota's had in quite some time in their athletics. So I look at who he's brought on. I mean, I look at the way he's trying to fix things. The way that the staff is trying to fix what they need to fix and then obviously keep what they have in the defensive side of the ball. I do think it's the right move. And then, again, Tracy Clay's is one of the best defensive minds that has been at Minnesota in a long time. There's no disputing that, but that, in that same respect, I mean, it's a lot tougher to market Tracy Clay's than it is PJ Fleck. And so you see the amount of attention Minnesota is getting on a national scale is something like we haven't seen for this Gopher football program in a long, long time.
I must have told you this before. I think he strictly 100% made the decision because he is a marketing guy and he didn't feel like he could market Tracy Clay's. And Tracy Clay's didn't market himself either, right? Tracy Clay's was the guy that's going to, he's going to sit in the dark room and he's going to out scheme you to the end. And that's not what Mark Coyle wants, right? He wants, and this is all speculative on my part, right? But his background being marketing, he wants someone that's going to sell the program for him. He wants to sit into the background and, make the strategic decisions that are going to promote the program, but he doesn't want to necessarily be that face. And instantly with PJ Fleck, you instantly have somebody that not only embraces it, but wants to own that 100%. And he's going to be the face of the program and he's going to sell the program. And I think that's 100% the reason he made the change.
Yeah, I mean, PJ Fleck is extremely, extremely more attractive in terms of how valuable he is to market. Now, again, at the end of the day, it is going to come down to wins and losses. And whatever PJ Fleck's record is coming after year five is probably going to determine that after he's able to get, you know, his first full recruiting class, which in my estimation is this 2018 class, because he had to fully assemble a 2017 class in 3 weeks, which is not at, you know, not adequate enough time to be able to do so. So he's going to have to get 4 or 5 years here before we know, you know, what the ceiling is here. But if they can just fix the offensive side of the ball, because there's some glaring holes at basically every position, and, you know, it's we'll have to see. I mean, I'm optimistic about it. I still think that this year, in terms of wins and losses, I'm still only at like 6 or 7 wins, because there are a lot of holes that Minnesota's got to fix. They also have a pretty tough schedule coming those last 6 games of the year. You know, you face an Oregon State team in year 3 under Gary Anderson that's going to be at home. So it's not gimmies in the non-conference as well. So I'm still only at 6 or 7 wins. But I think as if they're able to continue to fix things and have things progress here as, you know, as time goes on, I am optimistic with PJ Fleck here at Minnesota.
All right, last thing.
Yep.
Do you want to see oars on the uniforms? Because I particularly don't want anything to do with oars on the uniforms.
I'm sure they'll work it in somehow in some kind of weird design.
Have you seen some of those Western Michigan uniforms, though? Like, they're just oars everywhere.
Again, I do think you'll see it mixed in at some point. I mean, I'm a big fan, me being, you know, I think my age of 24 probably plays into it as well. I'm a big fan of, you know, I'm not Oregon crazy where they've had something ludicrous like 56 straight different uniform combinations. But, I mean, I do think, like, for certain games, you know, you switch it up and just have different kind of uniforms instead of just the maroon and gold. I'm not a particular fan of the white uniforms. So, you know, I do think, especially with how marketable PJ Fleck wants to be to these recruits and just to different people throughout the country, you'll see some different kind of color combinations this year. But I also do think that there'll be some kind of, I don't think the oars are going to be prominent because, again, you know, Western Michigan's, you know, football tradition and history is a lot different than Minnesota's, where they've won 7 national championships. And there are a lot of people that, you know, really do want to embrace that tradition, you know, me included, but I do think they'll be oars. Unfortunately for you, Luke,
I'm going to give the kudos to Jerry Kill though. Those uniforms that they came up with that they've been wearing the last handful of years, I'm a big fan, and I'm a purist. I like the more simplified uniform, like the Penn State approach, but I like that. I just don't want to see the oars. That's all.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. So I think that's probably going to wrap things up, Luke.
Yep.
So before I let you take us to the outro, I do want to thank the people for listening again. Again, I have gotten quite a few emails and tweets, people asking when the next episode is coming out. And again, that does mean a lot to Luke or I. So I know we've been setting records here of late with the number of downloads we've been getting. So we can't thank you guys enough for that. In terms of when we're probably going to record next, I know I'm working on some things here behind the scenes to potentially get a coach or two to come on here to, you know, give their perspectives, you know, instead of in front of the media mics where they're going to give you a bunch of coach speak. You know, they won't, you know, we can get into them in terms of with being a little bit more in depth in terms of what they think of the current roster, you know, their background a little bit. So we may be able to have some things for you guys in May and June. But I just want to be very appreciative towards the folks, Luke, because these guys have been fantastic. These guys and gals have been fantastic to the podcast here, and we're very appreciative for that.
Yeah, absolutely. As Ryan said, pretty crazy the number of people that have started to listen. It's kind of what started as like two guys recording, you know, their telephone conversations. It's pretty impressive. So thanks for listening. Appreciate it. And go Gophers.
Last thing I do want to say, though, is, again, Luke just said, like, we started with two guys recording a telephone call. You know, if you want to hear, or more specifically, you want to read all this.
Oh, yeah.
You do realize that Gopher Illustrated is exactly where you can read all this. I mean, I was at every spring practice. We had photos, video, and now we're starting our post-spring series in terms of going position by position. Again, if you love these podcasts, come on over to Gopher Illustrated. And again, we have the best Gopher basketball coverage anywhere on the internet with Ryan James. No one knows Gopher basketball, Gopher basketball recruiting, just Gopher basketball in general better than RJ. And I mean, Luke does a podcast with him as well. It's Talk Gopher Buckets if you want to search that and hear all about Richard Pitino's squad. But between Ryan and I can guarantee you will not be disappointed with our coverage. So as Luke said, you know, for Luke and Fry, we're very grateful for all of you guys. Go Gophers.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.